Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Clytus, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
That war rocket Ajax to bring back his body.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to War Rocket Ajax. This is the internet's most destructive comic book and pop culture podcast, and we are your hosts. My name is Chris Sims, and with me as always, the homeowner, Mr. Matt Wilson. How are you, Matt?
I'm great. I'm ready to live in that home. I don't yet, but I will soon. And that's home update for you. Right here at
the hottest new top of the show segment. Home update. And look, I know there's a lot of talk about home improvement on some of those other shows, those McElroy shows, but we've been in that home improvement game for quite a while. I just want to point that out.
We've been kicking around the More Powercast for years.
The More Powercast is less of something we've been kicking around and more of a threat on our listeners.
Like, and
if the Patreon drops below 1,500, that's when we should do the More Powercast.
I feel like it's more of a threat to ourselves than anybody. Anyway.
Matt, I feel like we've already lost the plot of this episode. What do we do here on this show, Matt?
Here on War Rocket Ajax, we talk about comics and we talk to people in the world of comics. And this week we're doing something maybe a little different from what we normally do. A lot of times we talk to comic book creators. And this week we're talking to a comic journalist about his interactions with some of the most fascinating people in comics, which are probably not ever people that we're going to be able to get on War Rocket Ajax, so we have to live vicariously through him. We're talking to Abraham Reisman about his recent interview with Todd McFarlane. We talked to him about Steve Ditko. We talked to him about Stan Lee. And it's great. It's a great, great interview coming up. Abe is a delight to talk to. And we really cover the bases with him.
Just as a teaser, like as a quick teaser, I just want to point out that there is a sentence that is spoken in this interview that ground my mind to a halt. Because it is one of the weirdest things I have ever heard anyone say out loud.
Well, prepare yourself to hear the thing that stopped Chris in his tracks. But before we get to that, we should thank our newest supporters on Patreon.
That's right, Matt. Now, these are the people who have gone over to patreon.com/warrocketajax, and they're kicking in as little as $1 a month to help us pay the bills and keep the show going and do new stuff on the show. Movie Fighters is Patreon supported. Snack Situation is Patreon supported. We have bonus content that we really like doing that we have time to do and can put out for people because we have supporters on Patreon. So everyone who heads over there, we thank you and we appreciate your support. So Matt, who do we have to thank this week?
Our newest supporters on Patreon include Gregory Silber.
Oh, thank you, Gregory.
David A. Brown.
Thank you, David.
And Patrick F.
Oh, thank you, Patrick.
Those are people who, as Chris said, went to patreon.com/warrocketajax and kicked in as little as $1 per month to help us out and to get ad-free episodes of the show in a special Patreon-delivered RSS feed that goes right to your phone or your favorite podcast app or wherever you can plug in an RSS feed and get podcasts. People who back us at higher levels get bonus audio, line stepper privileges, which allow them to get their Every Story Ever and Panel President lists read out on the show before anybody else's. They get physical rewards. They get other cool stuff. As soon as I have a new address, I'm going to order a bunch of t-shirts for people at the t-shirt level, for example. So
the new 2017 t-shirts, we should say, which have an all-new design, that is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's real cool. So if any of that sounds cool to you, head over to the Patreon, kick in a little money. If you can't support us on Patreon, hey, we understand. It's all right. You'll keep getting the show, as always, through iTunes and other podcast delivery systems. But if you kick in a little bit of money, you get a little something more. All right, Chris, now that we have thanked our Patreon supporters, let's do some checks and recs.
Let's do it.
Chris, what are you checking in with this week?
Well, Matt, I had a brand new comic released this week, Sword Quest number 0, and here is some great news for everyone. It is 25 cents at your local comic book store, or if you do not have a local comic book store or you don't have a quarter, it's free on Comixology. And it's 16 pages, full-color story. Me and Chad wrote it. Ghostwriter X did the art, who you might remember from Downset Fight. And Josh Kroc, who you might remember from Downset Fight, Awesome Hospital, Dracula the Unconquered. Copernicus Jones, too, right?
Starting with issue number 7, you bet.
Yeah, you might get all that Josh Kroc action in this new joint. The team is back together, and I am very excited about it. I did a signing over here at Ultimate Comics, which was super fun. I signed at Free Comic Book Day at Ultimate Comics in Raleigh, which was really fun, I assume. I have not done it yet, but I'm guessing it was fun. I hope it was fun. If it wasn't, I'm going to be very upset. It's really... it's a weird, weird project for a lot of reasons. Doing a license that has been kind of... I guess fallow for so long that you get to pretty much do whatever you want with it and take it into a weird new direction is an interesting thing for us to do as comics creators. So I am pretty excited about that.
The thing that I think surprised me the most about it is that it's not necessarily what you might expect going into a book about the game Sword Quest.
Yeah.
And I think that's great about it. You guys took something kind of from the real-world culture of Sword Quest and made the book about that. And it's a little bit of a curveball, but I think it really works. I think it's not just a straightforward adaptation of the game, which is cool.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of really good things from people who have read it, which is awesome. And again, the Zero issue is free on Comixology, so if you want to give it a shot, you can. And if you want to come get it from me, then we'll be at Heroes Con, as usual, and we'll be doing some other cons in the Southeast. Like this weekend in Virginia Beach at Tidewater Comic Con, Chad and I will be there, so if you are a listener in the Virginia area... then come on by and say hi. That would be super awesome of you.
And it's also a big week for the Chris Sims, Chad Bowers power team.
Because we are the power team. We do rip phone books in half in the name of Christ.
That's right. Because Chad's new Youngblood series started this week as well. So big
yes,
things.
Yes, it did. Sold out. Going to a second printing. That's my dude, man. I'm super excited. I actually read, I got to read it for the first time on Wednesday morning, and it is really good, that new Youngblood book. It's
got some clever ideas in it about what you might call the uberization of superheroes.
Really clever. I would say it's missing something, which is that Chris Sims factor. No, I'm kidding. Like, I am super excited for Chad, and I'm super excited that this book is out. So, if you like what we've done on, like, X-Men 92, on Sword Quest, on even going back to, like, Awesome Hospital, then you are going to get a kick out of Youngblood, and I'm really, really excited to see Chad and Jim Toe doing that. Big week for the CNC Comics Factory, as we once called ourselves before Charlie Chu asked us to stop doing that. Matt, what are you up to this week?
Well, I wanted to take this opportunity at this point in the show to do a little bit of War Rocket Ajax housekeeping. And it literally has to do with me moving to a new house. Because we've gotten a number of messages recently where people want to send us things.
Mm-hmm.
Now this is kind of more snack situation related than War Rocket Ajax related, but I wanted to say it here because we've also got some questions about sending us stuff from Ajax listeners who aren't necessarily movie fighters or snack situation listeners. Please send me those emails again about sending us stuff at like the end of May or the beginning of June, because I can't send you the address that I need you to send it to right now, because I'm kind of in two places for the next several weeks. So remind me that you wanted to send us something in late May or early June, and then I can let you know where to send those snacks or whatever you wanted to ship to us. Somebody wanted to send us, for example, a comic that we did not rank on the last Every Story Ever special. They wanted to send us copies of Nameless. So I would like to get those, but I can't give you an address where I can guarantee I'll get it in a timely way right now. So please hold off on those requests to send us stuff, because we do want it. But the reason I haven't been super responsive to that is because I will have a new address soon. So thank you. Hold off on shipping those things in the immediate, which is also the reason why I haven't ordered our new t-shirts yet or ordered a bunch of books for like signings and cons and stuff, which I'm going to need them for.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So,
oh boy, Matt,
but it'll happen. I'll have them soon. Anyway. So that's one housekeeping thing I wanted to get out of the way. Another housekeeping thing that I wanted to mention is we talked about doing our new Patreon goal, our new funding goal, and we have almost totally settled on doing comics catch-up. It won in the Twitter poll I did by a landslide. So, Chris, we will maybe do another monthly show where we just kind of read something that is suggested to us by listeners and talk about it a little bit. However, our idea of possibly doing that on video, no way. We're doing it totally audio because people can't watch videos as easily and readily as they can listen to just audio content. They can't, you know, watch a video when they're driving. They can't watch a video at work sometimes. And I've totally heard that response. So when we do finally do Comics Catch-Up, and I will be adding it to the Patreon very soon, it will strictly be an audio medium. And we will be asking, in particular, our Patreon backers to let us know which comics they really want us to catch up on. Those are just a couple things I wanted to mention. I don't want people to think that I am ignoring them when they want to ship us stuff. I just want to be in the place where stuff is going to be shipped to you. That is all it is. All right, Chris, it's time to make some amendations. What do you have to recommend?
Well, my recommendation is going to be a brand new podcast for those of you who love that audio content, like Matt was just talking about. This is the Monster Society of Comics. The people involved are probably going to be pretty familiar to you. This is a new podcast that Kieran Chiak and L. Collins are doing as a co-production between their two podcast networks, Good Egg Podcasts, which is Kieran, and the Intuit Podcast Network, which is L. It's kind of a continuation of something that we try to do at Comics Alliance. We did the weekly column at Comics Alliance every week where we would just recommend, we would go down the list and we would talk about stuff that we were excited for in a given week. And that was one of our most requested features, because people were always asking us, hey, where do I start? Like, what do I get this week? What's good? And they don't necessarily want to read a full review. They just wanted to get an idea of like what we were into. Monster Society of Comics is essentially just doing that. Kieran and Elle are going to have, I believe it's guests every month. With just kind of the simple idea of you go on the show and you talk about what you're reading. You talk about what you're into. The first episode had Andrew Wheeler, who was the final editor of Comics Alliance, and I was the other guest, and we just sort of talked about things we'd been reading, and then there was a little break, and we talked about some of the news in comics. Like, we talked about some of the upcoming Marvel Legacy stuff, which I know nothing about. So I was not very helpful in that. It was a really fun time, and if you're looking for a lunchtime-length conversation between people who are in comics and around comics about what they're reading and what they're into, then go check that out. The first episode is up now, and there will be episodes forthcoming with other guests. It's not one that I am doing permanently, but I would obviously be happy to be on that show whenever they would like me to. So go check it out. If you miss Comics Alliance, if you miss Kieran and Elle, then go give that show a listen and enjoy the Monstrous Society of Comics. Matt, what is your recommendation this week?
My recommendation is much in the same vein, in that it is a podcast that involves Elle Collins, and it is the Intuit podcast, which has made a return.
It is back once again with the Ill Behavior.
That's right.
Do you remember that?
I do remember that. I was on the premiere return episode. I guess you might call it the season premiere. Talking about noir, I think I mentioned it on the show before, but beyond just me being on the show, Elle is wonderful. I'm so glad that Elle is keeping busy with new podcasts and old. And if you have not taken occasion to check out Intuit, you definitely should. It is a fantastic and surprisingly deep dive of a podcast in whatever topic they're talking about. Because here's the thing that Elle does that amazes me every time Intuit comes up. Elle actually digs into the stuff so that she can talk about it with her guest. In my case, Elle said, what are some noir movies I should watch? Because I haven't really watched very many. And I sent over a list of, you know, a handful of movies that I think kind of represent noir as a genre. And when we were talking about it for the show, Elle was ready to talk about, you know, Sunset Boulevard and Double Indemnity. And it was kind of amazing. Elle really does the research, and it shows so perfectly on Intuit. And so it is absolutely worth listening to that show. All right, Chris, those are our recommendations. Let's talk about some of the comics that came out this week. The button.
It's time for the button. It's time for the weekly recap of the button, everybody. So, who's ready for this week's button? This week's button up.
Button talk. To close the button. So, Chris, you sent me a message, I assume immediately after you read Batman number 22, mm-hmm. that said, part three of the button is also not a Watchmen riff.
Yes. Yeah. And I realized that parts two and three are the parts so far that have been written by Josh Williamson. And it was only part one that was scripted by Tom King.
And have art by Jason Fabok.
Yes. So it's like, I don't know if it's just that, like, Tom King was the guy who wanted to do the riff on Watchmen, but I mean, it's the button. It's the button, Matt. Like, that's the thing they're doing. I am confused by this story on every level that I could be confused by it, honestly. And that's, like, and I mean that in that I'm kind of confused about what's happening in the story itself, but I'm also confused by the execution of the story in a way that I did not expect to be confused. In that the two halves of the story, like, that first issue is such a Watchmen riff, and now it is not. The remaining parts of it have not been. That's very, very surprising to me.
Well, here's what got me. The second issue, well, really the first issue introduces the flashpoint elements to the story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the second issue really digs into them with you know, them showing up in the Flashpoint universe in the Batcave with Thomas Wayne. And this third issue is a lot about Flashpoint Thomas Wayne. And then it closes and then it closes the book on that. That's over. And for all we know, the Flashpoint universe is gone.
I mean, you say that, but is it? I mean, that's the thing. Like, I don't, like, I know what you're saying, and I read the issue, but is the Flashpoint universe gone now, or is it just, like, I don't know.
By all indications in this book, the universe that was Flashpoint has broken down entirely. In part because Thomas Wayne has like accepted that his son is alive in this other place, and like Thomas and Bruce get to have this moment with each other, and somehow Flashpoint Thomas Wayne doesn't have a mustache anymore. I should note, which is fine, whatever. But Flash and Batman escape on the treadmill, and the impending sense is that there is no more Flashpoint universe anymore.
Yeah,
but the Reverse Flash is still running around. The Reverse Flash from the past is still running around.
Yeah, which is the only kind of level of Watchmen riff that we're getting, which is that, you know, like, which is timeline stuff. It's you know, oh, this is happening such and such minutes ago before we went to the Flashpoint universe. I still think it's really weird to blame Watchmen for Flashpoint. Right? Like on a metaphorical level, I think it is weird of DC Comics to pin the Flashpoint universe on Watchmen, which is both true and also not true at all. Just I feel like I cannot talk about this story and make sense. And I want to say, like, I don't think that's necessarily the fault of the creators involved. Like, I have talked before, like, I'm a big fan of Josh Williamson. I'm specifically a big fan of his Flash, which is a book I did not think I was going to like, because it's a Barry Allen book. But I think he's done a good job with it. I think the book has been pretty engaging. The story that he's telling is a weird one, but it's weirder in concept than it is in execution, if that makes sense. Like, I just can't get my head around the concept of it.
Well, I think more than anything, I'm just really interested to see what part four is. Like, will Tom King be scripting Flash, and will it be more of a Watchmen thing? Because the prevailing sense that I got from the end of this issue was Crisis? Like, maybe they're going to do Crisis?
Yeah, and well, it's also weird that we were like, when that first issue we came out, we were like, oh, it's a Watchmen riff, which is interesting. And then it kind of, like, we were like, oh, is this now a Flashpoint riff? But then it's Flashpoint for two solid issues. And I just don't know anymore, Matt. What? Like, I think
1.5, because they throw Flashpoint in the garbage can in this one. So I don't know.
It's genuinely confusing to me in structure. And maybe I'm just overthinking it. Maybe I just need to think of this in the way that, like, in the way that Secret Wars sounded, like, so confusing on paper. But it's really just, hey, you know, what ifs? It's just all the what ifs are happening at the same time. That's all.
Okay, I'll say this much. Remember last week when we talked about how it could be good if they only took, like, certain elements from Flashpoint and used them and sort of tossed away the bad stuff? They don't even get past – it's just Thomas Wayne. Thomas Wayne is the entire encapsulation and representation of Flashpoint.
Okay, can I say this about – why are we asking each other for permission to talk about this comic? I think – the idea of Flashpoint Batman and Flashpoint Thomas Wayne, I don't like it. I don't like it. just in general, which is weird because aside from the fact that it happens in Flashpoint, which was a story I just flat out didn't care for in general, like, I feel like it's got the earmarks of a bunch of stuff I like. Like, it's got Miracle-O, and it's got Batman, and it's got alternate universe shit, and there's kind of a little bit of To Kill a Legend in there, too. But I don't like the idea, as much as it's, like, super superhero universe-y, I don't like the idea of Batman getting a letter from the Shadow, who's Thomas Wayne. You know, I don't like the idea of Batman having a letter from his dad, from an alternate universe. I think that's really weird in the way that, like other superhero stuff that happens to Batman, I don't necessarily think is that weird. I think that kind of breaks the fiction in a way. So when that stuff comes up, it automatically kind of puts me on my heels. So this issue being Batman meeting the Flashpoint Batman, who is his dad from an alternate history, that's not even an alternate universe. It's like they go to great pains to be like, oh yeah, no, this is just an alternate history. It's not like Earth 2 or anything. That's why it's not in the multiversity map. Like, it is never going to ring true to me. And I feel like Batman, you know, the one thing that he's going to say to his dad is, hey, I have a kid too. It's like, it's so weird to me. And I can't really put my finger on why. Because it has all the stuff that should be emotionally resonant.
Well, there's also the thing where his dad is begging him not to be Batman.
Yeah, which again, makes sense. Nothing about that doesn't make sense. It just doesn't sit right with me, and I can't quite put my finger on why. But that's this week's installment of The Button, and I'm at this point, I'm feeling more lost than anything.
I feel like as an emotional moment, Thomas Wayne begging Bruce not to be Batman works. I think it's the thing that works the most in the issue. But we can agree to disagree on that. All right, let's move on to talking about Nightwing number 20, which has your boy in it.
Yeah, it does. Now this is some weird comic shit that I understand. Because the villain of this story, now Matt, have you been reading it?
I caught up today, yes. I caught up to with this Nightwing story.
Yeah, the villain of this story, you may know him as Barbatos. You may know him as the Hyper Adapter. You may know him as Mangrove Pierce, my father's double and mine. Is Dr. Hurt? Is Dr. Simon Hurt in the house?
You may know him as Thomas Wayne.
You may know him as Thomas Wayne. You may.
The devil-worshipping ancestor Thomas Wayne.
We talked about, and one of the reasons that I went and caught up on Nightwing was that we had talked about on the panel president list the idea of Thomas, like, of Dr. Hurt, and whether we thought he could come back. Like, whether we thought you could tell a second good story about Dr. Hurt that was not Batman RIP, that was not, you know, Joker dosing him with Joker gas and burying him alive, which comes up in this story, by the way. And he also refers to himself as the devil.
Yes.
It's pretty great. But we had a conversation about whether you would be able to do that. And I think what we have discovered is that, yes, you can. It is entirely possible for another creator to take those Grant Morrison elements, and this story is Grant Morrison as hell. It's a Damian and Dick story involving Dr. Hurt, and it takes those elements and does a really good job with them, and also does a really Dick Grayson job with them, which is cool because you never got to see Dick fight Dr. Hurt. Like, he was not Dick's bad guy. He was very much Bruce's bad guy. So seeing Nightwing versus Dr. Hurt is a whole different thing from seeing Batman, Bruce versus Dr. Hurt. So, and I love this.
And the art is very reminiscent of, not necessarily any one particular artist's style, because it's not really Frank Quitely, it's not really Fraser Irving, it's not really, you know, Philip Tan.
It's not really Cameron Stewart.
No, but it feels like it's reminiscent of Batman and Robin.
Yeah.
It feels like it's reminiscent of those Grant Morrison stories, particularly in the parts where it's, you know, you're in Dick Grayson's head. And yeah. And he's thinking of himself as Deathwing. So Javier Fernandez, who's doing the art on this issue, is doing a really good job. But what I think makes this work as a second Dr. Hurt story, as a new Dr. Hurt story, is how distinctly it calls back to those Grant Morrison stories, to the point where, you know, you've got Dick and Damian talking to each other about their Batman and Robin team.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, Batman was Bruce's mantle to pass on, but Robin is Dick's mantle to pass on. And how Robin symbolizes something so different from what Batman symbolizes.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dick outright says, I will not be defined by tragedy.
Yeah, which is so good. Which is so good. And I really love the idea, like, Dick Grayson, one of the reasons Dick Grayson's such a great character, as Nightwing, specifically, like the adult Dick Grayson, is that he's weirdly easy to relate to for, you know, the incredibly handsome circus acrobat martial artist raised by Batman. Like, he's weirdly, like, easy to wrap your head around and see yourself in, for me, at least. And Dick kind of having a conversation with Damian where he's like, yeah, like, I thought about telling Bruce that, like, I wanted you to stay as my partner, but I was afraid I would be a shitty dad because I've never been a dad before. Like, that's, like, I think that's a thing. You know, I am not someone who is planning on having children ever, or at least anytime soon. And that's still something that I feel like I can relate to coming out of, you know, Nightwing, which I think is a cool thing about this book.
One last book that we wanted to talk about is the first issue of the new Guardians of the Galaxy series.
This is by Jerry Duggan, taking over for the new series. And the art is by Aaron Cooter, who is someone that we are a pretty big collectively fan of. I guess I would say pretty big fans of would be the way humans would say that. with Ive Sforcina and lettering by Corey Petit. It is super fun. I should say that I actually did. Chad and I wrote the All New Guardians annual that's coming up with this team. So, you know, I have a vested interest in these characters in this book. But I've really enjoyed what Duggan did on Deadpool, too. And so seeing him shift over to doing Guardians, I was really expecting, like, a great mix of, like, comedy and action, and that's exactly what we got here. It's got really good cosmic Marvel stuff. I don't think it's going to blow anybody's mind to find out that the Grandmaster is in this, and you know how I love the Grandmaster. Matt, I love... What do you call them? Are they just the Elders of the Universe? Sure. I love those dudes. The Collector, the Grandmaster, the Champion. I love those dudes. Those dudes are great. This is essentially, the premise of this issue is that it's a heist story. And it is a weird Marvel Comics, cosmic Marvel heist story. And I love that. I love that stuff, which is going to become very apparent when you read the annual. But if you are excited about the Guardians, and you certainly have a reason to be right now, then I would say check out this comic. It's super fun, super colorful, moves really fast, and gets a lot done, and has some great, great character work, and a really, like, really cool last page. That's all I'll say, because it is, like, it's the sort of, it's the you know, it's the last page of the book, but it's not, like, a shock ending in the traditional sense. It's just a really cool idea showing up. So, check it out. It's really good.
All right, that's going to do it for our comics review segment. Chris, let's talk to Abraham Reisman about all the interesting people that he has talked to.
us for the program today. We're having someone kind of different on. And I'm actually very excited about it, because normally we have on comic book creators, a couple times we've had comic book editors, but it's a much more rare situation that we have members of the comics commentary community on the show, and I am very excited to welcome someone who has talked to me about stuff in the past, someone who has written very intelligently about comics from Vulture. Abraham Reisman is here. Abe, how are you today?
Hi! Yay! I'm here. This is so exciting. I love you guys.
Oh well, thank you. Thank you. That's so nice. Nobody ever opens up with that, and I gotta say, I wish more people would.
Let me tell you. We're here to be loved. We're desperate to be loved.
It's literally the only reason I'm here.
Why does anybody make a podcast if not to reach out into the void and try and, you know, feel connected? That's the whole point.
Before we get into talking about comics, there's an interesting subject we were going through before we hit record. And I'm not trying to capture the off-mic magic that we were creating.
It's impossible.
But we were talking a lot about candy.
Yes.
Which is something that I think is a subject that's near and dear to mine and Matt's hearts in a very literal sense.
Right at this very moment, it's creeping through closer and closer. Yeah, well, just for the listeners, let's walk back a little bit. My name is Abraham Reisman. Now, very often it's pronounced Reisman or Reisman, and that's fine. I don't take any insult to that. My name is spelled in such a way where those are, you know, possible pronunciations of those letters. So the way that I clear it up for people is with a little mnemonic. I say it's Reisman, like Reese's Pieces. And when I said that, Chris, you then asked...
I asked you to repeat what you had pronounced, because as Matt and I have gone into before on the show, there is a pronunciation of that candy that is unacceptable.
Yep. Which is, of course... On three, Reese's one, Pieces. Two, three, Reese's Pieces. Yeah, no, it's unconscionable. There's, I don't know what's going through people's minds when they say, "Oh, Reese's Pieces." Like, what do they think Pieces is? Do they think that's a word?
Player characters, obviously, of course.
Here's the problem with it. Here's the big problem with it.
What is it?
If one of those words was pronounced that way, maybe I would understand it, but neither of those words is pronounced that way.
No, neither one. Absolutely.
And then, and the point I was making is, when you extrapolate it into other Reese's products, it becomes a Reese's cup, or worse, just a Reese's. Which there are different, distinct Reese's products. And if you're going to pronounce everything with an E on the end of it, with an IE, as if it were an IE sound, you gotta say Skittles. That's all I'm saying.
Can I just say that I love it when we start the show with Matt Wilson at the level of anger that usually only comes out like maybe once every 5 or 6 shows?
Oh god.
It's always food related too.
It is. It's always food related. I think the last time you were on this map was when we last time we were talking about Reese's Pieces. I bring this up, Abe.
Yes.
Because I have a follow up question for you.
Go for it.
It's very simple. Like, you use this you used to call it a mnemonic. So presumably you use it a bit, right? Like
I say
you
use it a lot. Yeah.
So does that give people the idea that you are, like, if you have one frog-related thing on your desk, now you're the fucking frog guy, and every, like, office Christmas party, somebody's getting you a frog, and you're just like, I had one thing from when I went to the Grand Canyon. So do people are like, oh, that's Abe. That guy loves candy.
That's a great question, and if they're thinking that, they haven't
It's not,
me.
But thank you for saying it.
If they are thinking that, they've never said it to me, but you're making me realize that may just be a common assumption people have about me. Like, I say that, and it's not worth talking about for them. They don't go like, oh, so you must love Reese's Pieces. They just think in the back of their minds, like, he must really love Reese's Pieces. Jesus, he's always talking about it. Huh. I never thought about that. Yeah, well, I will say I do enjoy a Reese's piece as much as the next guy, but I don't indulge in it very often. Are you guys big fans? Is this like in your top five candy?
Well, I mean, you're going to have to listen to the Snack Situation podcast to find out our top five candies. But I will say, we have discussed Reese's Pieces on Movie Fighters before.
Uh-huh.
And I am a fan, especially if you take the Reese's Pieces and you get a couple of Reese's Pieces in your hand and then you pick up a couple of kernels of popcorn and you get that flavor sensation mixed up in there.
Yeah.
That's a good time. That's a really good time.
Yeah,
call me when you get the Reese's whole thing. Am I right? Abe, I have a couple questions for you. First of all, on name pronunciation, you say you get Reisman sometimes. Do you ever get Reisman, like Olympic gold medal winning gymnast Allie Reisman?
No. When Olympic gymnast Allie Reisman started to be popular, occasionally people would say, like, oh, you related to that person? And I don't know how to respond to that. Of course not. Our names aren't spelled the same way. You've never heard. That's not how names work. You can't. Maybe over the course of, like, thousands of years, like, spelling and pronunciation changes in different branches of the family. But no one seems to think that that's actually how my name is pronounced. That has not come up yet.
Okay, I'm glad we got that out of the way. And now I really need to ask you about Steve Ditko.
Yes.
Because
a person I've seen for a couple of seconds one time, which is more than most people, I will say that.
We have never spoken to anyone on this show who has been in the presence of Steve Ditko, and we've spoken to like five people who've written Spider-Man.
we talked to the author of Marvel Comics' The Untold Story.
Sean Howe,
great guy.
Who told us the amazing story about how he contacted Steve Ditko about doing an interview for that book.
And he got that little letter, right?
What he got back was a post-it that said, it was a denial. It was a turn down. It was just like, I'm afraid I cannot
help you with your project.
Yeah, that's right. But then it was signed, regard, one regard.
Just the one.
SD. And so, like, that's the closest we've ever been to anybody who has interacted with Steve Ditko. So, I mean, obviously you wrote a great piece about trying to talk to Steve Ditko and trying to interview him and that kind of thing. But I would love to get any of the, you know, what was left on the editing table, what was left on the cutting room floor
I put out everything when it came to my actual interaction with the great Steve Ditko, because, you know, it consisted of, well, it depends on how you define the interaction. I was very near him for hours because I was sitting outside of his office, just sort of waiting to see if he might come out and I could ask him a question, which in retrospect I feel kind of crappy about. Like, that's sort of a weird thing to do, but at the time it really felt like, oh, this is journalism. Like, this is what journalists used to do back in the day before you just set everything up via email. It was very exciting. And I don't think I did anything wrong, but, you know, on some level it's a little weird that you're just waiting outside some old man's door for hours on end. But only on the second day of me doing that waiting did I actually get to him. And, you know, the interaction consisted of me knocking on his door. I should point out that there was a TV on. I'm trying to come up with every possible detail I could give you guys. His TV was on whenever I was there. I could hear it through the door. And an analog, not just analog, like an old like phone with a bell in it, kept ringing over and over and over again. And I could hear like little scuttering of like maybe a pencil or somebody moving something around. And eventually I knocked on the door for, you know, the umpteenth time. He came to the door. And he opened it. He looked a lot like Dominic Chianese. Is that the name? Uncle Junior from The Sopranos? Am I getting that actor's name right?
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah, that's him. You know the guy I'm talking about. And he opens the door, and before I could say the words Mr. Ditko, he closed the door on me. He did nothing.
Like, he... Did he, like, see your, like, press badge or something? And immediately...
I didn't know. I had nothing specifically indicating that I was a journalist. He just opened the door. I don't know why he opened the door in the first place, because there was a little, like... I'm so mad that I didn't get him on a good day, because I talked to many people who had just cold-knocked, who had just come over there, knocked on the door, and he had opened it and had been, like, surprisingly generous with his time, had, like, talked to them. I talked to one guy who talked to him for 2 hours about, like, the Silver Age and Ayn Rand and just everything you'd want to talk to Steve Ditko about, and I guess I just caught him at a bad time or something. He opened the door and... made eye contact with me and then turned his head down and to the side, sort of at this like 45 degree angle, squinted his eyes a little bit and shook his head and closed the door. And all of that took less time than it took for me to describe what just happened. Like, literally, try and say the words Mr. Ditko out loud and you will have the extent of the full time that the door was open. It was interesting. I do feel like I had a rare... I mean, it's a rare experience. Who does that? You know, like, I interviewed Brian Michael Bendis. Have you had Bendis on the show ever?
We have not ever had Bendis on the show.
I interviewed him for a completely unrelated thing and asked if he had ever interacted with Steve Ditko. Because, you know, obviously he and Bagley are the longest-running Spider-Man team. He's written Spider-Man more than almost anybody. And I asked him if he ever interacted with him, and he said, I pulled up this interview so I can get the exact quote, just so I tell it to you exactly. He said he'd called him to have like a creator interview for Wizard Magazine, and he said that he was going to – could I interview you? And he said, I appreciate that, but no, it's an interview, and I'm just not going to do any interviews. I'm like, I appreciate that, but I'm curious. As a professional curiosity, what happened? Why don't you do any interviews anymore? And he said, well, that's an excellent question, but it's an interview question, and I don't do interviews. And then he hung up.
I don't think there is anyone that I could disagree with as much as I feel like I would disagree with Steve Ditko.
About, like life and everything?
About everything. But I also feel like there is no one... I cannot think of a person who is as straight up committed to the bit as Steve Ditko is.
I interviewed Dan Klaus a few weeks ago, and he's a huge Ditko head. And he was talking about how he wishes everyone who's a hardcore libertarian or objectivist Randian could meet Steve Ditko and just be like, if you go down this path, like, this is where you're going. Like, just... do whatever you're going to do, but just know that you, like, this is the full realization of philosophy in one person. Like, he completely committed to it. He doesn't, he's Rorschach. He doesn't compromise on anything. It's incredible.
I deeply want to respect the privacy of Mr. Ditko. I really do. But by the same token, could you hear what he was watching on TV? Because I've been sitting here going
so hard. I tried so hard. It sounded...
I'm trying to figure out what he could be watching. Like, what would be a TV show that Steve Ditko would watch?
I
got nothing.
I think it was news. I think it was newsy, because I couldn't hear any music. It just sounded like talking. So, you know, he's an old guy. Maybe he was watching CNN, like a lot of people in that demographic do. Or maybe it was Fox News. It didn't sound... like, it didn't sound like anything in particular, but I couldn't hear any music, so I'm assuming it was news. Maybe it was C-SPAN. Maybe he doesn't like having any kind of opinion involved. I don't know. I'm sorry.
I feel like if you are a listener and you're enjoying this interview, please send us at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. Please email us with your theories as to what Steve Ditko was watching on TV for 2 hours, because that is something we could do like a 2 hour Patreon episode about. I truly believe it.
My best guess, are you familiar with the channel MeTV, which is like what Nick at Night used to be? It's like old reruns.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, they have ads in my elevator. Yeah.
It's like old reruns of sitcoms.
Yeah.
I could maybe imagine Steve Ditko watching like Green Acres.
Do you think Green Acres would appeal to Steve Ditko?
Yeah, I don't feel like that's his thing.
Maybe not. I don't know.
I mean, for some reason it seems wrong. Like, I'm not trying to contradict you. I'm not trying to be a jerk about it. For some reason, it doesn't sit well.
Okay. Point taken.
So, farm living was not the life for him. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to, like, you've done a lot of high-profile interviews in your time. Like, you've had one brief exchange with Steve Ditko, which, again, is more than most.
Yep.
You recently did a big piece on Todd McFarlane, which I presume was to coincide with the 25th anniversary of Image Comics.
Yeah, my editor, my wonderful editor, said that he was a big Image head back in the day. I'm very lucky that I work for a comics geek and around a couple of other comics geek geeks in leadership positions at my organization. And he was like, oh, isn't it the 25th anniversary of Image? Is there anything that you'd want to write for that? And just like, I didn't have to think at all. I was like, I want to profile Todd McFarlane. Like, of all of those guys, he is the one who fascinates me the most because he's still, I mean, he and Liefeld are still huge stars in their worlds, the worlds that they travel in. But like, Todd is especially interesting because he never went back to the big two, right? Like, he never went back and did some work on whatever favorable terms Rob may have done his work with Marvel in the past. You know, he still...
And in the present, on May 17th, Deadpool Bad Blood.
Yes, that's right, in Deadpool Bad Blood, correct. But like, Todd, he committed. Talk about somebody who commits. And so I was given the yes, and it was surprisingly easy to get in touch with him. Like, there's a person who works for him who does various and sundry jobs, including acting sort of like a publicist. And basically, I just emailed this general inbox from his website and heard back from this person, you know, like within an hour or something like that, and proposed that maybe we get something to eat, me and Todd McFarlane, and like we'd do an interview over a meal. And I was informed, oh, Todd doesn't eat. So Todd
wait.
You've heard this?
No, I have not. I just need a moment. Okay, please continue.
Yeah,
please continue.
So she said, Todd, and she wasn't saying this like reverently, like a cult member or anything. There was a slight tone of like, oh, Todd, in her voice, but she was saying, you know, Todd believes in total body control, and he, you know, can go for days without eating, and I was like, he hardly sleeps. I was like, this is going to be the greatest profile that I've ever written. Like, I haven't even talked to him yet, and already I'm getting good stuff.
Todd McFarlane and Rob Liefeld, of everybody in comics who's ever worked in comics, and that includes like the big names like Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Mm-hmm. They're the only two who really got to be rock stars.
Absolutely. Completely.
Like Liefeld got to be in a Levi's ad, and McFarlane got to buy those baseballs.
Yes. Oh, you better believe he did. Yeah.
Well, and I mean, he got to buy the baseballs. He also got to buy the hockey team.
Yep.
He also got to, like, you know, he got Kiss to come do comics again because he's a guy who likes Kiss. Like, yeah, he is the rock star guy.
And the other thing is, like, you know, the thesis of the article became like, Todd never went away. It's just that comics stopped being his priority, and his priority started being toys. And he's been like massively successful in toys for a long time. That just happens to not be a world that I pay a whole lot of attention to. But like, he's done really well for himself. And also is this like toy auteur, which was a thing that didn't exist before him, I'm told, from the interviews that I've done. Like, you know, you might have hit toys, but it was never like you didn't know the person who designed you know, a Star Wars figure back in the, you know, 70s and 80s, right? But, like, you knew what a Todd McFarlane toy looked like, and you knew that it was made by Todd McFarlane, because it said Todd McFarlane on the box, and he would do, like, TV interviews about how he made the toy. And it's like, this guy figured out branding in a way that basically, like, no one other than Stan Lee has when it comes to the comics roster. And, you know, whatever you think of his quality as an artist, that's something to take note of. I mean, he is a massively successful guy, and he has done it his way, and he has never answered to anybody. That was the headline we went with. You know, Todd McFarlane still answers to nobody. He hasn't gone back and worked for anybody else. He's still Todd McFarlane, man. It's amazing.
Well, he's always struck me as a really interesting creator. Like, I was, you know, obviously, totally. Matt and I were both Spider-Man readers in the early 90s and late 80s, which is when we would have been, like, getting super into Spider-Man. Like, I remember having that The Very Best of Spider-Man paperback that I literally wore until the binding wore out. Aww. You know, I read until the binding wore out. And just, it was right about the time that I started to be aware of that comics creators were a thing. And, you know, all those stories kind of look like John Romita to a kid.
Yeah.
Until those Todd McFarlane stories show up.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, well, this is a different thing.
Yes, absolutely. No, I mean, he injected new life into that character. Now, whether that was life that you wanted to see or not is a completely separate question. I mean, it depends. Your mileage for giant Mary Jane boobs might vary, but, you know, it was new, and it's really hard to do something that no one has ever seen before with a property that had been around as long as Spider-Man had. But, I mean, we just sort of take it for granted that the spaghetti webbing is, like, we sort of talk about it like it's some little joke or, like, some little part of comics history, but, like, you know, I wasn't, the timeline of my life doesn't work out such that I was reading comics prior to the Todd McFarlane Spider-Man run, but, like, I can't imagine how crazy it must have been to see the spaghetti webbing for the first time. It had never been tried. And it's a visual medium. Like, I mean, that's something that sticks with you. It's iconography.
If anyone comes to a con, Matt, I don't know if we've done enough cons that you know this as well as Chad does. But if anybody gets like a dollar sketch from me and they just tell me to draw whatever I want, it is always Spider-Man, and it is always so that I can draw that webbing, because I love drawing that spaghetti webbing. It's my favorite thing.
He wanted his whole thing was, he said that Spider-Man had become too much of a man and not enough of a spider, and he wanted to bring the spider back. He wanted to make it, like, weird and animalistic and give him all those weird poses. And then he went ahead and he did Spawn, and Spawn is not necessarily for me as a reader, but you go back and read those early Spawns, and it is just vibrant. Like, the writing I can kind of take or leave, and he more or less said that. He did this amazing interview with Gary Groff of Fantagraphics back around the Image launch, where he more or less just said, like, yeah, I don't really care so much about the writing. Like, you know, I just don't like working for somebody, so I'm going to do the writing myself. But, like, you look at the artwork, and you know, you almost wish you didn't speak English so that you can just sort of ignore the words entirely and just focus on this gorgeous creature design that he was able to do, these awesome panel layouts. I mean, there's a reason why he was a rock star. It wasn't just famous for the sake of being famous.
Did you ask him questions about how he doesn't eat? Was it all comics, or were you like, hey, I heard you don't eat?
So it turned out it was a little bit of an exaggeration. It's just that he hardly eats. He can, like, go a whole day without eating, and be kind of weak the next day. It's just that he's working so hard that he doesn't remember to, so he has, like, all these people around him who have figured out ways to make sure that he gets some food in his body, and apparently the killer app is Fig Newtons. Like, he likes Fig Newtons, and they're small and bite-sized enough that you can sort of, like, keep them around him, and he'll eat a Fig Newton, and he gets that energy into his body. It's amazing. I mean, and the guy's in incredible shape. Like, whatever he's doing, it's working for him. I was so in awe of Todd McFarlane at the end of this interview process. I was just like, how do I get your life? Like, here I am as, like, a humble journalist, like, living in my, you know, hovel of an apartment with my two cats named after Batman characters. And, like, look at you! You know, he tells these, like, long stories about how, you know, the big thing that I put in the article was he told this very long story about how he makes sure that he has meetings in rooms with lots of sun in his offices, which are in Arizona, so that he can give people who are coming to have meetings with him lots of water, tell them that they can't leave the room until they have a deal on whatever business thing they're talking about. And then when they start to squirm because they have to use the bathroom, like, that's when he brings up the thing that he, like, the thing that he really needs them to say yes to. And then because they have to pee so badly and they already agreed that they wouldn't leave until they agreed on something, they'll say yes to it just so they can use the bathroom. Now, I have no idea if that scenario has ever actually played out or whether it's just, like, some war games that he drew up. But, like, he told his story completely straight-faced. There was no moment of him going, like, I know this is a little weird. I've got my little quirky quirks. But no, like, he firmly believes in the business philosophy he has come up with. But he's also really nice. He was in no way a jerk. He talks a lot. But, you know, he was a perfectly pleasant guy. I wish you guys could meet him. I think you'd get along.
Oh, if he wants to do the show, the open door.
Yeah.
Open door for Toddy Mac.
He does know that in totally legal terms, that's kidnapping, right? If you put somebody in a room and tell them they can't leave, that's kidnapping.
Well, I don't think it's like, I'm going to hurt you if you leave. But no, that's a great point. You do make a solid point there.
I think my dream scenario for this is for someone and their assistant to, like, if Matt, to use you as an example, like, if me and Matt go into a business meeting with Todd McFarlane and he's, like, trying to pull that on us, and I just look at him and I go, Matt doesn't urinate.
Yeah. It's, you gotta have talent in this world. You gotta develop your skills.
Who are the other big ones? Because I did a big
profile of Stan, Lee, and didn't get to talk to him either. I have now written write-arounds about two of the greatest comic book creators of all time, because neither one would speak to me. The Stan one was like a six-month process. Well,
he is notoriously reserved.
That's Stan. That was the thing. I thought this was going to be a slam dunk. Like, that comics format memoir that he put out was about to come out, and we got an advanced copy of it, the one that he co-wrote with Peter David and that was drawn by penciled by Colleen Duran. And I thought, oh, this is great. This is an opportunity for me to, like, do a career retrospective interview with Stan. And, like, you know, I'll prepare for it for weeks and get, you know, I'm sure I'll only have limited amounts of time with him, but he'll give me all these great little nuggets of wisdom and great stories and so on and so forth. And then, yeah, long story short, he just, I don't even know if he ever saw the request, but the people that I spoke to, and I spoke to people from all angles of his work, and he is involved in a lot of things, so there are a lot of angles you can work. None of them could set up time with him, and they strung me along for a while, and I just eventually was like, I gotta just move forward with this and give it my best shot. So I did, you know, what they refer to as a write around. I just interviewed everyone who knew him that I could find, just read lots of archival material, watched interviews, and then flew out to Los Angeles to go to the insensitively named, and I believe they've renamed it, Stan Lee's Comic Kazi in 2015. And he was there. And so I, like, was in a small press Q&A thing where I was a few feet away from him and got to ask him a question. But he was difficult to track down. And I did do a little bit of guerrilla reporting by just going to the offices of POW Entertainment, which is the company that he co-runs. POW, of course, standing for Purveyors of Wonder. And POW has an exclamation point at the end of it. And I went to the offices and couldn't get in, but it was so weird. It's just this, like, crummy little, well, I don't know what it's like on the inside, but it's just this sort of crummy office building in Beverly Hills, and you go to the door of their office, and there's just this printed out piece of paper with their logo on it, and it was kind of like listing to the left and a little torn. I was like, what is this company? Like, what do they do? And they wouldn't even give me anyone from the company to talk to. I got nothing. So I just wrote around it, and I think I was very proud with how it came out, and only one person I interviewed who's a big Stan Lee loyalist said that they would never talk to me again because I was too hard on Stan. I won't say who it was, but I think most people got that I'm a big Stan fan, as all of us should be on some level. But that, you know, like when I interviewed Colleen Durant, she said, you know, you have to be forgiving of your parents, but you know that your parents made some mistakes in the past. So anyway, that was Stan. Who else have I done big profiles of? Oh, well, I'm working on one right now of Christopher Priest, made his
return.
That's
gonna be a good one.
Yeah, it's written. I'm waiting for it to. I'm not sure when it's going to go up, but that was a delight. We talked for a long time, and you guys are Priest fans, I take it.
Oh yeah,
yes.
Oh yeah,
he's amazing.
The literal one dude who could get me to read Deathstroke.
Priest, a.k.a. Jim Owsley.
Jim Owsley. Yeah. Christopher Priest /Priest James Priest, which is what he writes under when he does prose, /Jim Owsley, Aloysius Jamesley. Do you guys know
Al
about
Jamesley?
This? Yeah, Al Jamesley.
I do know about Al Jamesley.
Yeah,
I know about Al Jamesley being a bit of a sore point.
Yeah. For the listeners, two creators who were not fond of how Priest edited them at Marvel created a character called Aloysius Jamesley, who is this very flashy, grandiose architect who thinks he's a genius but is actually very bad at his job. it's a little on the nose. I don't think readers could have possibly had any idea who they were making fun of, but I'm sure at the time you were like, this is clearly some kind of very mean in-joke. But yeah, so I'm working on a Priest profile right now, and he's a delight. And I was fascinated to find out that he was going back to Marvel. I was already working on the story, and he'd come back. He'd done Q2 with Valiant, and he was doing Deathstroke, and he was doing a little work with Lion Forge. But then, while I was working on it, it was announced that he was coming back to do that Inhumans book for Marvel. And there is some bad blood there, but if it's like only Nixon can go to China, right? Like, maybe that's not the best metaphor, but like the idea that you can paper over or at least move past those kinds of differences really gives me hope for all the conflicts in the world. But yeah, it's amazing to be living in a world where Priest is back. I never thought that we'd have that.
I cannot stress enough that Deathstroke is not a Deathstroke comic, it is a Priest comic.
Yes.
That Larry Hama did some layouts for. And I got mad stoked.
Yep. Well, yeah, it's great. Well, and the story, of course, being that he, according to him, the big two would reach out to him all the time during that 10 years when he wasn't working in comics, and they would just constantly ask him to do black characters. Like, his portrayal of it is, like, he'd get calls saying, like, we're bringing back all Negro comics, and, like, we want you to do Black Lightning. And he just felt like, I'm not going to do a black character. Like, come back to me when you can give me something that's not a black character. And then they got in touch with him about doing Deathstroke, and he's like, have they rebooted Deathstroke and he's black? And they were like, nope, he's still white. And he was like, I'm in. Let's go for it. Why not? He didn't even, know much about Deathstroke. Like, he remembered, some stuff from New Teen Titans, but it's not like... I mean, I guess who is a big Deathstroke head, now that I'm saying that out loud?
Oh, you would be surprised.
Oh, really? Would I? Oh, dear. Ugh, of all the characters to be a hardcore stand for, that really says something about a person, maybe.
All you have to do is write an article, as Chris did, called Stop Trying to Make Deathstroke Happen, and you will find out.
Oh, no.
Which now, and again, that was, 3 years ago, and now I'm just like, well, they figured it out.
Yeah.
They got me.
It was all just to get at you.
We've got to jump over to Twitter questions here in just a minute, but before we do, Abe, I wanted to ask...
not just about the big profiles or the interviews, like with Daniel Clowes, like who you recently interviewed.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the striking the balance between comics journalism about comics and comics journalism that's about kind of all the stuff around comics, because I think it's something that you know, comics news sites struggle with all the time.
Totally.
You get those like occasional, I think the Beat does those like surveys of like how much coverage comic sites are doing actually about comics, or how much they're doing about movies and about TV shows and about, you know, all the other stuff that kind of is part and parcel of the world of comics, but isn't comic books specifically. And you talked about being, you know, having comic nerds as editors and bosses, which I'm sure helps. But do you ever kind of have to stop yourself to be like, I need to be writing about comics instead of, you know, that cast picture of the Inhumans or whatever.
I'm staying out of the debate about the cast picture of the Inhumans, but you know, I'm very, 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 very lucky because my job does let me write about comics. But part of that is I'm also expected to write about the stuff adapted from comics. And I'm totally fine with that. In general, I lean towards liking comics more than adaptations of comics. That's a gross generalization, but that's sort of usually how it works. That said, you know, you asked me about striking the balance. I don't think about it so consciously. There was a time when I was doing probably too much really obscure niche comic stuff, like doing long interviews with indie creators who had like one book out, and I could do that all day. I mean, that's if I ever, you know, if I had my druthers, I would just do comics coverage all the time, and it would be about the most obscure stuff. But that stuff doesn't get that much attention. So I figured out how to, the way that I sort of balance it is I now have this monthly column where I recommend comics for the upcoming month that I think people might like. And because I have pretty much total creative freedom about that, I try to highlight as many indie books as I can, just because, you know, that's a spot where I'm not going to get in trouble because I can like have a bunch of superhero titles in there, but I can also then throw in like stuff that Koyama Press is putting out, or, you know, or D&Q or Fantagraphics. And, you know, then I end up spending the rest of the time that I'm not doing comic stuff on stuff adapted from comics. And, you know, I'm sort of talking in circles here because I'm realizing I don't sit down and plan it out. It just sort of, it's tended to work pretty well in the past, you know, year or so. And I don't think it's come through any, like, particular, you know, math problem that I've sat down and figured out for myself. And so it's a joy to be able to write about all of it. Go ahead.
It's kind of more just a gut thing.
Yeah, it's kind of a gut thing. We're like, I know, at this point, I have, to answer your question from before, when it comes to striking a balance, I've gotten pretty good at following my gut and knowing what comic stories are going to be interesting to a general reader. You know, knowing when something is going to be interesting enough to me that I'm going to be able to write about it passionately, but will also be potentially of interest to somebody who's never read a comic book in their life. Like, for instance, recently I wrote an essay about the Ultimates and the complicated legacy of the Ultimates. And, you know, that in some ways that's a real niche thing to write about. It's a comic that's not even ongoing anymore. Well, I guess there is something called the Ultimates, but it is not, you know, the original run. But I wrote it from the perspective of saying, like, okay, this is something that had a huge influence and also is something that talked about superheroes in a way unlike, a way that comics before it and since it really haven't, for better or worse. And so then you're taking the long view of it and you're not writing the article for the target audience of, like, geeks who are already really familiar with the Ultimates. You know, you have to keep it somewhat general. And, you know, I've been doing this long enough to know that, like, I think my editors are going to say yes to a pitch like that because I can keep it, you know, balanced for both kinds of audiences. But I do envy, I mean, I do envy people like you who get to have audiences that are very specifically already comics literate, because you guys can sort of do these, you know, next level discussions. I mean, Chris, your columns are gospel for me. I love them. And one of the great things about them is you're operating from the assumption that there are certain core texts that your readers have already read and certain opinions they've already heard. And then you can kind of do this graduate seminar. And I love reading that stuff. And I can't really do that. I'm not complaining, but I can't really do that with the platform I have. So anyway, I guess that was just a way of backing into saying I really like your writing, Chris.
Well, thank you.
I think you're terrific. So it's sort of a gut feeling finding that balance.
Well, listen, if Vulture's hiring, just let me know.
Yeah,
but in the meantime, we are going to ask you some more questions, Abe. We have asked plenty of questions, and now it is time to turn it over to our listeners on Twitter. Mm. Matt, if people want to get in on these conversations that we have every week here on More Rocket Ajax, how exactly can they go about that?
Well, Chris, it is easy. All you have to do is go to the office of an old man and sit outside that office for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, and hours until finally that old man peeks out of his door and says, "What do you want?" And you say, "I want an account on Twitter.com." And then he says, "All right, come in. I'll sign you up." And then that man
– this is a long walk.
That old man – that's right. That old curmudgeonly man sits down in front of his – CRT monitor and signs you up for an account on Twitter.com, and you make sure to tell him to follow the ISB, that's Chris, and the Matt D. Wilson, that's me, and that you both wait patiently until Thursday night at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 6:30 Pacific, and until one of us puts out the call for questions. Then you can ask a question just like the questions you're about to hear for Abe Breesman, the first being from Hasbaz on Twitter.
Okay.
Harry J, who wants to know, who are some other good culture critics you like to read or listen to?
Oh, well, one place that's been really, if we're talking comics specifically, one place that's been top of mind for me since the Eisner nominations came out is Women Write About Comics, which I think is just a terrific spot. There's so much good stuff there, a lot of really good writers there. I've also been thinking about another Eisner nominee, Oliver Sava, who writes a lot for us as well, I think. He got nominated for his work at the AV Club, but he does good stuff with us. Obviously, both of you guys are really good. I'm thinking very comic-specific right here. Huh. Larger? Oh, God. There's a lot of good stuff out there. Find out who I retweet. Follow me on Twitter and just see who I like. And follow everyone.
Also over at the AV Club, Tegan O'Neill.
Tegan O'Neill. Fantastic. Tegan, who I quoted in that Ultimates piece, because this is funny. I quoted Tegan talking about Superman and how Superman's greatest superpower is the notion that people can be good at all, that like altruism is possible, that true goodness is possible. And that, you know, ends up being this important point near the end of the essay that I wrote. And Tegan pointed out that she wrote that article as a joke, like it was making fun of deconstructionism. And so I was like, that puts me in a weird position. Like, do I take it out? Because it's a really good point. Like, it's a solid observation. So I opted to keep it in. But yeah, no, Tegan's great. Tegan's brilliant.
Hi, Phil _ Adam. On Twitter, Adam Highfill wants to know, should the Young Pope get a second season?
I mean, I don't want to spoiler the end of Young Pope season one, but it seems like it would be difficult to pull off. That said, God, I love that show. You guys are fans, right?
Haven't seen a second of it.
Oh my God, you would love it. I wrote this whole piece
about it. Would I? No, because here's the thing about my media intake. Anything that you would call a drama stresses me out real bad.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, it is very dramatic, but it is – the reason I say is, like, you know, you have an affinity for things that are kind of cuckoo bananas, and it's totally nuts. Like, it's got a – the Pope has a kangaroo. There's an official papal kangaroo in it. It's so good. It's so smart. And also the way that Jude Law's character, the titular Pope, is written is like a masterclass in how to write a supervillain. I wrote a whole piece about that where, like, it's just – I don't want to give away why, but it's this extremely good case of, like, writing somebody who is genuinely intimidating and frightening and unsympathetic but still utterly gripping, which is hard to pull off when you're writing a supervillain. Let Sleeping Dogs Lie. As much as I would like to see more, I think it probably ended on the note it should end on.
Well, they really painted themselves into a corner by aging him up 30 years in the finale. Sailor 2099 on Twitter says, do you guys like go-karts?
That's a tough one.
Is that a question for everyone, Matt?
Well, it is you guys.
Fuck yes, I like go-karts. What's up?
What the hell kind of question is that?
I'm from the South, son.
Is that a regional thing? I think of go-karts as being kind of universal.
I feel like there are certain things like dirt bikes, go-karts, that are perhaps universal, but that are especially encouraged in the South.
Got it.
If you've ever vacationed in Pigeon Forge, you'll really understand that there are 20 go-kart tracks there, maybe. Anyway, Zach Fig on Twitter, and let's make this as quick as we can, but because it's a big question, but he asks, from a cultural perspective, what are your thoughts on Nick Spencer and Secret Empire?
Oh, I am really going to stay out of that one because it is it is so hard to say anything that's not going to get you in trouble in any part of that debate. You know what? Literally, this was my nightmare. I was like, I'm going to go on this show and somebody's going to ask me about Nick Spencer and Secret Empire. And I'm not kidding. Like, literally, this was like the one thing I was worried about. So I'm going to stay out of it. I am curious to see how Secret Empire plays out, both in the core mini and in the tie-ins. I will say, from a completely objective perspective, it has been totally fascinating to watch the debate that has happened over the course of the past year. It's been utterly, like, from the perspective of somebody who writes about this industry, I think it has been such an interesting jumping off point for a lot of dialogue about the way people interact with brands, interact with characters, but also interact with, like, brands that create characters, the way that social media can be used by creators for good or ill. I mean, it has been a roller coaster ride, and I am not going to say anything about who I side with. I'm not sure I even do side with anybody. I've been watching it from the outside. And I'm curious to see how the series plays out. I do like the idea of the world being an AU. Like, the idea that we're living in an alternate universe is kind of interesting to me. But I'm going to stay out of it for the most part.
The culture around it is a combination of ingredients that could only happen right here, right now.
Yes.
In
absolutely.
2017.
I will say that the Guardians of the Galaxy Secret Empire tie-in, All New Guardians of the Galaxy Annual Number 1, is well worth your time.
Great.
Abraham Riesman, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I know that there's a lot more that we could cover, but we are unfortunately out of time this time. Before we let you go, please tell all our listeners where they can find you online if you wish to be found.
But I do wish to be found. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/AbrahamJoseph. Joseph is my middle name. Or you can go to my website, which is also my Tumblr. It is AbrahamReisman.com. And it's I before E, but if you misspell it and do E before I also registered that domain name and it redirects to the main site.
Our guest has been Abraham Riesman. Check out his work. Sometimes he talks to me about Archie, and I enjoy that.
Oh, we didn't talk about Archie! Oh, no!
Even though our phone call lasted about an hour, and I think I got three sentences in the final article on that one. Abe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Thanks once again to Abe Riesman for joining us on the show. But now it's our turn to answer a couple questions. This is our listener-supported Q&A segment.
That's right. And we're going to take a question here from AJR82 on Tumblr, who wants to know, what are your comfort comics you go back to after a bad day? Are there comics you, like, actually reread to feel better?
I don't know if there are. There are comics that I reread. Like, I will be looking for something and have to get out Year One or Jackstaff. And, you know, honestly, it's probably Jackstaff. But, like, I will get out Year One and then accidentally reread it. Like, I'll be like, oops, I read the scene where Jim Gordon fights Flass in the woods. I guess I'm doing that for the next hour. But I don't often just pick out something, just, you know, come home after a hard day and set up a line of comics. You know, there's stuff that I go back to pretty often, but it's nothing, it's not usually like a comfort read sort of situation. Do you have anything like that, Matt?
I don't typically reread comics. It's just not something I, like, when I have so many comics that I've never read that I need to catch up with or discover, I don't do a lot of rereading. But I will tell you, the comic that I have reread the most is probably Preacher. I almost always end up coming back to Preacher in one way or another, either for research purposes or just because I want to. I've also reread Scott Pilgrim at least once, I think. But, yeah, I don't know that I would call any of it comfort food, but certainly I have returned to, I'd say, Preacher more than anything else.
I feel the same way. I probably reread stuff more than you do. But I, you know, looking around the room, I've got shelves of comics I've read, and then I've got shelves of comics I haven't read. You know, like, I've got David Brothers, like, just gave me all of Monster, the manga, and I've only ever read the first volume. So, like, I would feel guilted sitting in this room reading Batman Year One again, a book that I know forwards and backwards. But also, like, in the case of something like a Jackstaff, like, I do feel like I get something new out of it every time I read it. And you know, I just reread Mutant Genesis. I was on a podcast called The 90s Percentile, where kind of the gimmick is you pick something from the 90s and talk about it. And since Lila Palooza had just come out, I was like, oh, what if I talk about Mutant Genesis? So I sat down and reread that, probably for the third time in 2 years, you know? But I don't know if I would call that like a comfort read. I think reading new comics is comforting to me. You know, like, sitting down with something that I think I'm going to like and I haven't read it in a while. I will say I do go through web comics more than I go through, like, traditional superhero comics when I feel the need to kind of, like, decompress and go back to something that feels familiar and good. And 90% of the time, it's Akewood. I saw a thing I didn't agree with, and I just decided I wasn't going to talk about it. I was just going to sit here being right, and they can sit there being wrong. And that led me to rereading that Akewood bit. And so I read the whole, like, Steve's Party sequence in Akewood, which is amazingly brilliant comics.
Yeah, I will definitely occasionally go back and just read chunks of Akewood, for sure.
Yeah.
Another one that I will go back and just, like, pick out an issue of and read it is Tales Designed to Thrizzle. Like, I'll just grab one of those issues and read a few pages and laugh. Because, you know, over time you forget those jokes and then you're reminded of them and they're just as good as the first time you read them. Let's see if we have time for another quick question. This is from an anonymous questioner on Tumblr who asks, do bad guys always have to have depth? Especially in a 20-page comic, isn't it okay for Lex Luthor to just be a jerk because he's a jerk and not because his dad was mean to him or whatever?
Okay, I think there's a little bit of false equivalence in that. I don't think all villains need to have depth. I think good villains have depth. That does not necessarily equate to sympathy. I don't find Lex Luthor to be a sympathetic character at all. I don't think, like, Lex Luthor's dad being mean to him explains or excuses any of his actions. I think Lex Luthor has depth that informs his character and makes him a better character, in the same way that, like, the depth that Dr. Doom has makes him a better character. But, like, I don't sympathize with Dr. Doom. Like, you know? I know you do, Matt. I know you have nothing but sympathy for Dr. Doom and his goals.
Yeah, equating depth with trauma, I guess, or you know, some kind of inciting factor for doing bad things. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think that's... I think you're right. It's kind of a false equivalence because, you know, superheroes can become superheroes for the same reasons that supervillains become supervillains. Because it's not about whether these events happened to a character. It's how they process these events and take them in. Like, I think Kingpin from the Daredevil TV show, who is somewhat different from Kingpin, the comic character, is interesting because of the story with what happened to him as a kid and with his parents. But it doesn't make him not wrong for what he does. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where you have to find that line. Like, a villain can be fine as just like somebody who wants to do a bad thing for an issue or two. But if you want them to have legs and want them to have longevity, eventually there's going to have to be more to them than that. Just like a hero can't just be somebody who decides they want to do good stuff and there's nothing more to them than that. Like, a character who's just bad or just good can be fine in a microcosm, but if you want to do lengthy, ongoing stories with them, there's got to be something under the surface.
For example, I don't think Dr. Doom's mom being trapped in hell, right? Which is, you know, a thing that I think is the closest he comes to being sympathetic. Is when he is when we find out that his mom is in hell and he's going to go fight the devil to get her back. Because that shit rules. I don't think that necessarily precludes him from being a villain who can just show up and be an asshole either. I don't think you need to bring that up. I don't think Dr. Doom needs to have a soliloquy every time he shows up about his mom. I think it makes him a better character that's in there. And I think that it can provide him with a motivation to do something, but I don't think it needs to, like, the guy's name is Dr. Doom. If you just want him to show up and be a jerk, he can.
Yeah, I mean, by the same token, you know, there's the whole thing with him being in love with Valeria. Mm-hmm. And that's played as, like, this, like, you know, oh, Dr. Doom had a romance in his life, and that, you know, that's a reason to think to humanize him. That's a humanizing force. And then Doom just fucking pulls the rug out from under you on that one.
By the same token, I don't think Batman needs to talk about his dead parents every day. It's only ever mentioned once on Batman 66 in the first episode. It isn't mentioned on Batman the Animated Series a lot, you know? Like, it takes him a couple episodes to get around to talking about it. I don't think Spider-Man needs to talk about Uncle Ben all the time. I think Spider-Man works better if you know, Spider-Man has that moment of, I don't want to fucking do this, like, but I have to, and here's why I have to, because that's what defines him as a character. But I don't think it needs to come up all the time. And in the same way, like, I feel that way about the heroes and villains that we've talked about. Joker never needs any explanation for what he's doing, by the way. Just if there, Joker needs none of it.
Very true. Thank you for sending in those questions. If you would like to send us a listener question, you can do so on Tumblr by going to warrocketpodcast.tumblr.com. You can also send them by email at warrocketpodcast@gmail.com. That is also where you can send every story ever lists, panel president lists, comments, or if you want to sponsor the show, you can let us know there and do it. Also, check out our website, which is warrocketajax.com. That is where you can stream the show, download the show, read show notes, and leave comments. It's also where the every story ever list and panel president list reside. And leave us a review on iTunes. If you like the show, please go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, because the more of those we get, the more we are featured there. Now we've reached the part of the show where we tell you all the different places that you can find us on the internet. For me, it is so easy. All you have to do is go to mattdwilson.net and you will find links to all my stuff, including Supreme Villainy, which is now available for pre-order. Publishers Weekly calls it a tongue-in-cheek faux memoir. Chris, where can people find your stuff?
People can find my stuff at the-isb.com. Sword Quest number 0 out now and free on Comixology. Army of Darkness, Ash vs. Army of Darkness number 0 will be coming out next month for 99 cents in print and presumably digital as well. And of course, Deadpool Bad Blood is out on May 17th, so next week? Next Wednesday? The Wednesday after this one? It's gonna be awesome. It's super, super fun. I finally got to like read the whole thing for the first time, and it's really, really great. And it's legitimately, I think, some of the Rob's best stuff ever. And it's awesome. Before we get out of here, Matt and I have been trying to direct our listeners to some good organizations, people who are doing good out in the world these days. And we thought it was probably pertinent that we talk about someone, an organization that's dealing with helping people get medical care. We've talked about organizations in the past like Doctors Without Borders, like Planned Parenthood, both of which are great groups that could use your help. But also, we wanted to talk about Remote Area Medical. You can find them at RAMUSA, ramusa.org. And this was actually recommended to us by Kathy Leamy, our good friend. They are an organization that is donor-supported, and they support the operation of mobile medical clinics that deliver free, high-quality vision, dental, and medical services to children, individuals, and families who do not have access or cannot afford a visit to a doctor. They've been around since 1985. They have 100,000 volunteers who are licensed dental, vision, veterinary, and medical professionals. So they actually help out with animals as well. They're a really good group that came highly recommended. And they provide medical care to underserved areas for free with volunteers. That's a super awesome thing that they're doing. And we support that here at War Rocket Ajax. And we hope that that you will support it too if you head over to ramusa.org, ramusa.org.
Yes, definitely go check that out and help if you can. And Chris, that is going to wrap us up on this week's War Rocket Ajax.
That's it, Matt. That's all we got for this week. It's another one in the history books. And you know I have to ask, Matt. I feel like I know the answer, but I got to ask. How did we do?
Let's see. A glowing parchment has materialized in front of me. And a disembodied bone hand is writing on it with a quill pen. It's writing three letters. Those three letters are HQC. High quality content.
352 in a row. HQC, always. We will be back next week, everybody. We love you.
Yeah!
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.